Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
And Andy.
And Andy. Welcome, Andy.
I'm here, yeah.
So, you know, I'm not sure what to say again. It's another, you know.
Beautiful day.
It's a beautiful day, but it's just kind of ho-hum. It's a great day in paradise again, you know, nothing new.
It's gorgeous.
So it is great to be here this morning. And as far as the COVID good news part of this, well, obviously some states are relaxing those rules. And while there are still those who are saying, you know, we got to be careful. You should, you know, hunker down and not be anywhere. They've made that claim many times. And each time it's been shown that it hasn't drastically increased any numbers, you know, that Thanksgiving. Well, let's go back to the fair last year, you know, the county fair here. They were really concerned that that was going to be a super spreader.
What county fair here? Didn't they cancel
the bulk of everything? But the fair was here. People were getting together. That was the first time. And it wasn't a super spreader. And then, you know, of course, Halloween wasn't a super spreader. And Thanksgiving wasn't a super spreader. And Christmas wasn't a super spreader. And, you know, so this concern seems to be waning a little bit, which is good. We can all get out and start being a little more normal. But all of that being said, it is important to realize that we have had some real control over diseases, not only COVID, but, you know, the flu. I don't know what the numbers are, and they haven't been tracking them much, but we believe they're down significantly.
Right.
And so
flu vaccinations are down, and flu infection is down.
Yeah. So if we are willing to follow these same standards of personal hygiene, you know, wash your hands 20 seconds often throughout the day, you know, just be a little more careful and cautious and understand that, you know, that vaccines or that viruses do get passed from people to people.
And if you are immune compromised, continue to wear your masks,
right,
whether you're in a state that has a mandate or not. It's no longer socially unacceptable to do so. So just protect yourself, regardless of what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, I think 2 or 3 years ago, if you know, you felt like you wanted to wear a mask because it was smoggy in the valley or something like that, you would feel uncomfortable that people would think you were weird. Now I think you can wear a mask every day and not be concerned about that for the long term, no matter what the mask mandate might be in the state. So it's all good. So, Andy, you got any great news?
Great news.
It can be moderately good.
It was my birthday Monday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, 55 years old, and my sister made me a peanut butter chocolate pie.
Wow.
So
nice.
And I got
your
sister
must love you.
A couple of barbecue shirts, because everybody knows I like to smoke meat on my Yoder smoker, and you know, wife.
I love it.
Wife bought me some. I mean, it's been a great week.
You said that was a Yoder smoker?
Yoder, yes.
Yoder,
that's good.
Not familiar with that one.
Made in Yoder, Kansas, that's the name.
Okay.
Love it.
All right. And you got to choose that, I'm sure.
I did. It was part of, you know, we have a sponsor here at the Barbecue Pit Stop, and it was part of the deal with them. I got it on trade. It was really cool.
Okay. Well,
that is cool.
It's well that you're taken care of.
I should have you guys over sometime. I love brisket, pork, chicken, turkey, whatever you want. I'll smoke it for you.
Well, thanks.
And I think we're allowed to now.
Yeah. We'll get together.
That's right.
We'll get together.
No mask at my house. Okay.
Okay. I wasn't willing to make that declaration here on the radio because I think people still have choices, but,
Well, that's his
if
choice, and I
love it. If you want to wear one,
it.
You
right.
can. I
yeah,
think.
No,
I,
that's
but
good.
You don't have
so,
to.
I support the all-about choice. That's really my biggest position. In everything that we've been doing in creating this business and in COVID, my most important stance has been, we live in America, folks. Let's remain free and have choice. That's just been my big position.
That's right. So welcome to Elder Care Radio, Wednesday morning radio, best half hour in radio, really, where you get to learn the most and enjoy conversation and information. And today we have a couple of different things we want to bring up. We started telling you a story last week, and we ran out of time, about a circumstance that we had that kind of surprised us.
But it's really important and relevant for everyone in, you know, well, everywhere, but specifically those that we're talking to today in Southern Utah. Remember that you do have to be your best advocate, and you do have choice. It is Everything in this life in America is your choice, but you do have to stand up and demand your free will.
That's absolutely right. And those are the points we really want to make today, is that if you're not getting choices, then you're not being fully served. You need to be involved in your medical care, not allow somebody else to take control of it. Certainly get the best advice that you can from all of the sources that are available, and not limit your information from just a single source. So last week the conversation that we had last week was from the week before. We had a lady call our office and she was asking about palliative care because she had been struggling with a number of health issues, and her doctor, or more specifically her physician assistant, had been seeing her for a long time and didn't give her any resources, any help, any solutions to that problem, and just said, well, there's nothing that she can do and just has to deal with it.
And in fact, I think it's important to say here, they weren't finding any diagnoses, and therefore they were kind of discounting her feelings, her pain, and, you know, what was happening in her body, instead of just, you know, admitting to her, okay, we've done all these tests and we haven't found it yet. They were kind of discounting, saying it's probably psychosomatic. You know, you just need to relax. You're stressed. You're depressed. They tried to write it off on all these other reasons for her extreme pain and fatigue.
And so she was reaching out to find other solutions because she wasn't finding one there. And she called us, and we appreciate those calls. And this had nothing to do with hospice. It was just somebody looking for information. We were happy to help. We talked about palliative care. And one of the things that we do when somebody calls us and wants some help is we try and find out all the information we can. She's had a number of tests and other information in her medical history. So we asked her physician assistant for that information. We submitted a very standardized form to their office by fax and asked for their complete medical history, their physician narrative and their plan of care. And we got nothing back, which is unusual.
And we had stat on it because it was important. So we called and they said, oh, yes, we saw it. And then the next day I called again because I still hadn't received anything. And they said, oh, no, we didn't receive it.
Stat means immediately. It's Latin, you know, half-dead language. That's the best way to communicate. We sent this a couple of times and they didn't respond. And they just said, no, we didn't get it. And so finally we called and actually just said, hey, we sent this. And the person that answered the phone, the office assistant there, was very clear that they really didn't intend to send anything, even though that's a Medicare standard. That's a medical standard that physicians and medical personnel share that information, because it's important to know all of the information, not have to start over again. As far as cost goes, it's certainly good, but to share that information so that you can get more than one perspective on it. But it was amazing how arrogant they were about, well, we may send you something, but I'm going to let the physician assistant, the PA, make the decision of what they want to send you, because we don't think that they need you. The physician assistant didn't think that patient needed anybody else's care, even though they weren't providing it.
Or, you know, to request information to help them work through the information they were receiving from their provider, to help them navigate the information and, pick it apart to determine what was really happening with her health care. And it's always funny because, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Sometimes doctors use these terminologies that is standard in the medical industry, but the layman patient doesn't always understand the full terminology that they're using. So we had offered to just help her navigate through the system and dissect her diagnoses so we could determine, you know, for her, help her. We weren't going to make the choice. She was going to make the choice of what the best next step of protocol would be. But the doctor's office, you know, didn't want to do that. They, you know, first started with the COVID excuse that we have all this extra time and so you'll just need to be patient.
Right. When we said, well, we just want all the records, they said, oh, well, then our policy is we have up to 30 days to provide that. And that's just 30 more days that somebody's going to be suffering that they may not need to. And so this is certainly an unusual story. The problem is it's not as unusual as we would like it to be. And what we found is that COVID is being an excuse for many organizations to not really follow through on anything they're doing. Well, we're shorthanded because of COVID, so we're not going to do this.
And people aren't in the office. And that department's closed.
Right. And then they will find a loophole within the COVID rules to somehow protect themselves even more. And right now, probably the biggest one, we happen to end up with an internal document from our local hospital system.
Did you just say that? I thought we were
gonna I didn't name them. Out. I didn't use any names. I just had a local hospital system where they were celebrating the fact that because of COVID, their social workers are not actually going to be meeting with any of their patients when they are being no face-to-face meetings with the patients when they're leaving the hospital. So any referrals that are going to be done are going to be done solely within the hospital system. They don't have to give them any choices. They don't have to inform them of anything. They're just going to refer directly within their system. So they were all excited that in their home health division and in their durable medical equipment and in their hospice and all these other areas where they normally would allow a patient to have choices of who they wanted to provide care, they're not going to provide any choice, and then it's just going to fall back into that hospital system again.
Just to make sure everybody understands, Medicare requires that although you can refer to yourself, you're supposed to give three alternatives when you are the main hospital provider. Why is that? So that you don't monopolize, and not only do people have choices, but it also ensures that the care is, better because there are choices available.
Yeah, that's exactly it. While every organization probably provides what would be considered adequate care based upon your minimum acceptable standards, we don't think that adequate is the best choice if better is available. And if you don't have the option, you don't know that there are choices out there, all you can get is adequate. And that's not necessarily in your best interest. Within our realm of hospice, we know that we provide hospice different than other companies. And so we would like you to have that choice. But we also assume that in other areas like home health, that not all the companies do exactly the same thing the same way. And it would be in your best interest to know whether which company provides care that's more appropriate for you. So if you don't have a choice, if your doctor gives you no choice, then you should really demand some selection. And that's really at every level, even in the care that you're provided for any disease you might have or any problem. You should ask them what the options are above and beyond the standard one. Because what we found, and this is an aside, what we have found is that sometimes doctors are encouraged to provide a recommendation that isn't necessarily going to be the best for the patient, but is simply best for the organization that's paying the bills. And if you ask for other options, they may provide them and you may get better care. But you have to be involved in your own best medical advocate position.
And to round this out, we're happy to say that we were able to get her medical information, help her dissect through the diagnoses and the tests that were provided. And we were able to provide her the direct sources that she chose, that she wanted, and all of her needs are currently being met. And she has been very appreciative and thankful that we were there to help her gather the information she so desperately was looking for and find a path to finding pain-free resolution and finding support, people that would actually validate that, no, I get it. This isn't just in your head. You are right. You have a lung that's not working.
Yeah, there were some issues. But we just opened the door to having options for and alternatives that are working for her. And that's really the important thing is that each therapy, each drug has a different impact on different people. And you should have choices to determine what's going to be working best for you.
And this specific lady did not want to have a lot of medical procedures and drugs. She's certainly limits the amount of drugs that she likes to take, but she did want somebody to validate that her pain and fatigue was real and there's a reason for it. And you can, go talk to these specialists and they may be able to help you find resolution. So she's very happy on the path that she's on now.
Right. And all of the feelings that people feel are real. So if we can address those, or we can at least acknowledge them, then we can always move forward. So kind of along those lines, here on Senior Care Radio, we want to introduce more information and some of the things that people are coping with. Neuropathy. It's one of those common issues that pop up as we age. And if we don't have a good understanding of it, it can be, you know, overwhelming, and we need to figure out how to manage and cope with that. And the Foundation for Peripheral Neuropathy did a really great article. And so we want to kind of cover some of the points in that, just to open that up, not only for those people who have it, but again, for anybody who knows somebody who has it, so that you can help them and maybe make things much better.
Andy, do you know anyone that has suffered with neuropathy?
I know someone very well, myself. So,
really?
Yes,
okay.
I have severe neuropathy in my feet. So.
So on the neuropathy side, I mean, it is a devastating problem because it's constant. It, you know, you don't get away from it. And what we found is it has a lot of other psychological impacts that can happen. And trying to manage all of those things are important. So it can affect how you feel. You know, sometimes people can feel hopeless because this doesn't go away. And so all of those things will affect your mood and your overall health. And so we really want to kind of go through these things and get people just some information. It's not going to be enough to solve any problems, and we'll address the reality that neuropathy is not something that can generally be cured, but merely managed. Interestingly, I think a lot of us are familiar with neuropathy, and there's a lot of different causes of it. Many understand that, you know, diabetes can cause neuropathy. Chemotherapy, many forms of chemotherapy can cause neuropathy. And there are other sources. There's actually an inborn tendency towards neuropathy in some people. So how do we manage that the best? And the first and foremost is take care of your feet, especially if you're diabetic. You know, when you're not having those sensations, those normal sensations in your feet that you would notice, then things can get out of hand. You know, so if you get blisters or sores or things like that, and they don't heal, then it creates a whole new set of problems. So first, take care of your feet. Be willing to, you know, be careful with those. Use soft cotton socks, you know, all of those things. And kick in here anytime you've got some.
My favorite is the massage therapy, Andy. Have that. It helps with circulation. It helps with anxiety. It's amazing the pressure points that we have in our feet that stimulate areas in our body that create or promote healing and well-being.
Right. I think it's important to inspect your feet often, because if you can't feel them, I've had a couple of different instances in my life in the last few years where I've actually cut my foot, the bottom of my foot. I didn't know it because I didn't feel it. And the only way we discovered it was I was walking around the house getting blood on the floor. And actually had to, okay, I got to sit down here. And I had my wife inspect my foot and find out I had a wound. Had no idea it even happened. Had
right.
no idea. So inspecting your feet when you know, especially when your feet are the target of this neuropathy is big.
Yeah. Sometimes people don't realize really how little feeling or sensation you have in your feet.
Right.
We had a gentleman talk to us about an outcome after not discovering that he had a carpenter's nail in the bottom of his foot. He did not discover a carpenter's nail.
His wife discovered it when she threw the blankets back in the morning one day and said, oh, man,
oh, no.
What
is that smell?
What is that smell? And they found that it was just necrotic, tissue in his
right.
foot.
Well, I'm going through something like that right now. I had a wound that we thought we had taken care of and healed from a burn last summer. And then I developed a blister just a month or so ago. And it turned out that wound had never fully healed. And so I had to go. I had foot surgery last week, and I'm wearing
Andy,
a boot
I'm
now.
Sorry.
I see my boot down here, but they're very concerned about my foot. And all of it was because I couldn't feel it.
Right.
I didn't know what was going on,
right.
and until my leg started swelling up and turning red, and I realized, there's something going on down there. And we had to go to the doctor. So.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's why we're talking about this today. Because many people don't realize that when you start to, well, we can still walk. So we don't even recognize that we're not having sensation there. No pain, no sensation. For most of us means don't check it out. Don't seek further. I think any of our listeners that have listened for very long realize that that's what happened to my dad. I mean, he was otherwise pretty dang healthy, but he discovered a wound at the end of his toe, and actually he had cut a toenail too short, and it didn't heal. And they ended up amputating his toes and then wanted to take his leg up to his knee just because it had gone so long. So it's an important thing.
Yeah, that's a good indication that this is serious stuff we're talking about. And for those people who don't understand neuropathy, it's when the nerves aren't functioning correctly anymore and they start to deteriorate. And so they're not sending the signals we would expect. And sometimes they don't send any signal at all and we just are numb. And at other times, they just have a constant signal that is pain. And so it hurts to walk. It hurts to do these other things, but it doesn't feel different no matter what you're doing. You could be walking on rocks and you wouldn't notice that because of the other sensation that you have. So you do have to be careful. And so neuropathy is one of those things. Now,
but if we don't have those common indicators, it's so easy just to continue in your day believing that everything's fine and not look. So the point today is, whether you think you have neuropathy or not, everybody should take a moment and check your feet, inspect them from the toes, the insides of your feet, the bottoms of your feet. Really give a good inspection because it could be too late to find it, especially when you're alone and you don't have a loved one that's kind of watching out for you or pointing out that things are a little different or there's a smell in the bed.
Yeah, that's right. And then we've got some very good secrets to improving neuropathy.
Ooh, I like secrets.
The first is eat healthy.
Well, that's out the door. But no, I'm just kidding.
And then
can I deal with my neuropathy and still enjoy my foods?
And then in addition to that, another secret is to quit smoking.
Okay.
Reduce alcohol consumption because alcohol actually contributes to that. Mm-hmm. There are a number of drugs that we use for pain that cause continued problems there. So you should really look at that. And some of the things that happen with neuropathy is it's harder to sleep at night. And so we're not getting the sleep that we should. And so we're trying to adjust for that. And you do need to get some help in determining what is the best way to go about it.
That was a really good point you made. I'd like to stress on that a little bit more. A lot of the medications that we are prescribed actually numb the sensation. Therefore, you won't recognize that the numbing is part of neuropathy versus numbing sensations in other areas of your body. So do a good self-inspection.
And you mentioned massage, which is great for improving the circulation, but so is exercise. Mm-hmm. And exercises don't have to be running and things like that, but just ankle rotations and, you know, toe touches and movement down there will help that circulation and improve some of that that nerve damage. So those are some of the things. But on the sleeping side, it was amazing to me going through this article and looking at it that there are medications that disturb our sleep, and codeine is one of those. And many of us have used codeine for pain, but that makes it hard to sleep. And if you can't sleep, then that makes it worse. And so all of the things we can do to improve our sleep, including not staying in bed when we're done sleeping, because that low-level sleep doesn't do us any good and we just get in a bad habit, but not using the television at night to fall asleep because we're keeping our mind occupied and the light affects us and all kinds of things. So if we can improve our sleep, we may be able to solve some of those problems. If there are things that we can do, exercising late at night, not the best. A couple, 3 hours between exercise and sleep is usually better. And so how do we improve our sleep? Well, quit smoking, limit alcohol consumption, take fewer naps, don't stay in bed too long, adhere to a regular schedule, you know, go to bed at the same time every night, get up in the morning. And an interesting point they made is that during the first 2 weeks, if you're making these changes, your sleep may get worse.
Hey, thanks for being here. If you have any questions or need any assistance, give our office a call, Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care.
435-477-6999.